The unofficial start of summer is upon us, and local and state leaders are mobilizing to keep residents safe. From gang and gun violence to highways and waterways, officials are employing strategies to protect residents. One of those strategies is to convince neighbors to be on the lookout. See something, hear something, say something. And ShotSpotter technology in Cleveland will be listening too. Welcome to the Sound of Ideas Reporters Roundtable. I'm Mike McIntyre. We'll talk about summer safety to start today's show. Later in our conversation, opponents filed a second lawsuit seeking to stop a planned August vote on making it harder to amend the state constitution. Activists came together in Akron to urge the U.S. Department of Justice to investigate Akron police. And Ohio Republicans introduced a bathroom bill preventing transgender students from using bathrooms and locker rooms that match their gender identity. They'd be required to use facilities that match the gender on their birth certificates. First, news. It's the Sound of Ideas Reporters Roundtable from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Mike McIntyre. Thank you so much for joining us. The Memorial Day weekend is here, and safety is a top concern for city and state leaders as we head into the busy summer season. It's a big concern for all of us, too. From anti-violence measures to summer youth programs to traffic calming strategies and boating safety, Cleveland and Akron leaders are pleading with the public to do their part to keep everyone safe. A group challenging the state's planned August election, where voters will decide whether to make it harder to amend the state constitution, has filed a second lawsuit. This time, the group says the ballot language approved for State Issue 1 is deliberately misleading. Hundreds of protesters came to Akron this week to demonstrate against the special grand jury's decision not to indict police officers in the shooting death of Jaylen Walker. Activists have a number of demands, including requesting that the Department of Justice investigate the Akron Police Department. And Ohio Republican lawmakers introduced a bathroom bill that would require K-12 and college students to use bathrooms and changing rooms that match their sex assigned at birth, not their individual gender identity. Joining me for the roundtable this week, in studio from IdeaStream Public Media, supervising producer of newscasts, Glenn Forbes. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Good to have you here. And reporter Gabriel Kramer is with us, too. Gabriel.
Happy Friday.
And happy Friday to you. In Columbus, Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau correspondent Joe Ingles is with us. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah, so good to have you with us. And we don't take calls on the Friday roundtable, but we do seek your comments and feedback and questions. You can do that via email or Twitter. Email is soi@ideastream.org. Again, soi@ideastream.org. And you can tweet at Sound of Ideas. I just pulled out the cell phone, so I'm ready for you. And let's get ready to roundtable. Safety has been the word of the week from city and state leaders, and for good reason. We've arrived at the long Memorial Day weekend, which marks the unofficial start of summer. From gang and gun violence to highway and water safety, officials are asking for help from the public and, in some cases, from the federal government to protect residents. An estimated 40 million people will be on the move this weekend. Highways and airports will be busy. The forecast looks good, so expect waterways to be busy, too. The arrival of summer also means summer vacation for students. Cleveland and Akron both have taken steps to increase neighborhood safety. Violent crime increases in summer months, and Cleveland Mayor Justin Bibb wants residents to be actively involved in keeping their neighborhood safe by alerting police if they see or hear anything that warrants attention. And they may see or hear a lot. Homicides are ahead of last year's pace in Cleveland, with 66 versus 63 at this time in 2022. Other violent crime is up 14% this year, too, and there's been a whopping 83% increase in stolen vehicles. Cleveland officials announced this week it'll expand its ShotSpotter gunfire detection technology across all five police districts. And in Akron, the rise in gun-related violence and deaths is so extreme over the past several years, officials consider it a public health crisis, and they're searching for strategies to stop the flow of illegal guns into Akron. They want to reduce youth-related violent crime by 10% by 2028. So we put all this together because we've arrived at that time, Glenn, when it is the unofficial start of summer. The city wants to provide activities for young people, give them safe places over the summer. There's a lot of money that's being put into neighborhood safety. What is that strategy? What does that look like? What's the aim there is basically keep kids busy?
Yeah, and I think
a little bit more.
Yesterday's press conference was interesting because it was about an hour long, and they kind of split it between talking about how they're going to use data to target some of this crime. Meanwhile, they're down about 230 police officers. So it's like we're going to hire these five crime analysts and hope that the using this data, which Mayor Justin Bibb is big on, helps kind of make up for some of that shortfall. On the other hand, they're saying Families need a plan. Kids need a plan. And Sonia Pryor Jones is the city's chief of youth and family success. Now, the fact that they have that position kind of tells you, right? You know,
what
their plan is, what their aim is. And she's saying that the city's going to have daily programs at rec centers and at schools. She says every single neighborhood. There's STEM, which, of course, science, technology, engineering, and math programs. There's dance, esports, you know, video games, and photography, enrichment programs, academic programs. And they're saying, you know, it's not enough to just say the kids are out of school and we're going to take care of the crime part of this. We need families and children to have a plan, and they plan to provide these at the rec centers and schools in every neighborhood.
What's interesting, we talked about this before when the then superintendent of schools, Eric Gordon, was walking door to door with Mayor Justin Bibb. That's happening again. The mayor says he plans to go door to door if needed so city residents know about these summer programs. It's one thing to have them, but it's another, and it's really hard to get that out if you're not talking about it in school because school's over.
Right.
How do people know that they have access to these things? And literally, it's door-to-door.
Yeah, and this kind of door-to-door, you know, grassroots, whatever you want to call it, has kind of been a staple of Justin Bibb and his administration so far. He talks a lot about, you know, trying to get that word out. But you're right. If you're not a media consumer, a frequent media consumer, and if the kids aren't in school, it can be tough to kind of get that message out. So how do you do it? Well, I mean, they're in some ways, yeah, you got to go door to door. You got to post signs. You got to make sure, you know, so like you said, a lot of this is part of an awareness campaign, too, to make sure that these families and these kids know that, hey, these resources are available and it'll keep them off the streets, keep them out of trouble.
Gabe, the resources are important. I don't want to minimize that because people might say, listen, people are getting shot in the streets and we're talking about esports. But the fact of the matter is that stuff is important. You've got to give kids things to do. On the other hand, the reason for that and one of the frustrations is, and the mayor expressed this, we heard it on the newscast just before we came on, is the level of gun violence that's happening in Cleveland, and Akron officials are feeling the same way. And the mayor talked about frustration about what needs to be done at a higher level in the Congress to do something to help them get these guns off the street.
Right. So it's gun control laws. I mean, I think reading that off the surface, it's what can be done to, you know, make it not so easy to get access to these guns. But, you know, if I'll read a little bit of his quote, he says, you know, Columbus and Congress and D.C. have to give us more tools and enforcement powers to get guns off the streets. You know, that's, you know, long term, I think people are thinking gun control laws, but in the short term, more ability to perhaps get assistance, perhaps boosting police presence in some regard, and, you know, something more short term that they can take action quicker.
I thought it was interesting as well that Mayor Bibb made it a point toward the end of the press conference to call out what he thought was some judges. He said, some of our judges are letting repeat offenders with gun violations back on our streets. That's frankly unacceptable. You hear that a lot from conservative circles when they talk about gun control. Yeah. They say, we can have all the gun control we want, but if we have, and again, quoting conservatives, if we have liberal judges letting criminals back out on the streets, you know, what good does it do? So Mayor Bibb hit it on all angles, really. He said, we're going to use data. We're going to hire these crime analysts. We'd like to hire more police. We know we're 230 short, according to Chief Wayne Drummond. We need more legislation and more gun control, but also we need judges to stop letting repeat offenders back on the streets.
Joe Ingles, when Gabe was giving us the quote from the mayor, it started with Columbus and D.C. So when we talk about Columbus, lawmakers at the State House have enhanced gun rights in the state. They've also taken steps to prevent cities from enacting their own safety laws. I think that's what he's driving at.
Right. They have taken those steps to try to rein in what cities can do, take power away from cities. We recently saw a law here in Columbus that affected the magazines that can be used in guns. It affected straw man sales, those kind of things. And a Delaware County court put that on hold. There seems to be no consensus to go in the direction of reining in the guns. However, we are seeing Ohio lawmakers go the other way. They're making it easier for citizens to own and carry guns. And just this week, lawmakers considered a bill that would make Ohio a Second Amendment sanctuary state, basically saying that some of the Biden policies on guns, they couldn't be really enforced here. And they're even, this bill even looks at not hiring federal employees who they think may come in with the intent of enforcing those federal gun laws.
Hmm. What's interesting is how complicated this debate is, because as you talk about those things, what's happening in Cleveland are illegal guns on the street, not people who can go and get a carry a gun legally. And often we hear about assault weapon bans, and we're not talking about assault weapons on the streets of Cleveland with the 66 deaths that have happened so far this year ahead of last year's pace, three ahead of last year's pace. So there, that kind of discussion and debate you would think would happen, but in Columbus it seems as though there's no discussion debate, there's no, and in the nation as well, there's no a little bit, you know, enhanced background checks or other kinds of things. We're not getting to the heart of that.
No, not really. I mean, that's not where lawmakers want to go. Now, there was a little bit of pushback on this Second Amendment bill the other day, because it would have, the way it's written, depending on the interpretation, it could have affected hiring military folks and that sort of thing in Ohio to be on police forces. And we all know that military background is something that, you know, a lot of police forces actually like that. So, but as far as actually taking any viable steps to reduce any kind of gun use or ownership down here, that's really not on the table right now.
All right. Well, we'll certainly be talking about the efforts to stem violence over the summer on the show during the week, as well as on Fridays, too. Let's talk about some other safety issues, though, that are coming up. And again, it's because it's the kickoff of the unofficial start of summer with Memorial Day. Gabe, Akron is focused on street safety, mm-hmm. Literally driving safety. In Cleveland, there are these speed tables. They're like little flat mounds that are put in the street, and you can't fly over them or you're in a world of hurt. And in fact, Cleveland wants to expand them. In Akron, they're saying the same thing. We want to put these things in and cause people to slow down, because usually when you have high speed, that's when, if you have an accident, death occurs.
Right. So you imagine these being not quite speed bumps. They're not as tall speed bumps. They're longer and wider, but it'll definitely slow you down. And, you know, pilot programs have existed in Akron for the last couple of years. And in some areas, you know, data is showing that cars are slowing down by 6 miles per hour on average. And in residential streets, that goes a long way. In Cleveland, you're finding that miles per hour is going down by about 8. And in a residential street, that's 30% of how fast people are supposed to be driving on those streets. And the initiative to reduce traffic deaths is not necessarily people in cars, but being able to drive while respecting pedestrians on the road. I mean, that's a big issue here in Cleveland, and Akron wants to take a crack at solving it as well. So you're talking about 21 new speed tables beginning June on 11 different streets in Akron.
Yeah, and that's this has been a trend. You're seeing this in a number of cities. We wouldn't have known what a speed table was a few years ago. And now I think it looks like it's going to become a pretty common thing in these residential neighborhoods.
And because it's not only working, but residents are requesting it. So, you know, a lot of the, you know, the new ones coming to Akron are based on input from residents and saying, I would like one here. So, you know, you're talking about two in each of the wards in Akron.
There have been instances, including an incident last year where a child was killed in Cleveland, where residents wanted to take it upon themselves to build their own speed bumps.
Yeah, yes. Not only that, but you're seeing other grassroots organizations or grassroots efforts to, in addition to these speed bumps, do other things like really paint bright, vibrant crosswalks or request from the city bright lights that flash as people drive by. So, you know, just drawing as much attention for drivers to say, hey, there's people walking here or will be walking here.
It's one of the things Akron's going to do, too. They'll have solar-powered speed indicators so that when you're driving down, you can see, oh, geez, I'm going 52 miles an hour. Maybe that'll help slow you down as well. Glenn, on the highways, a ton of people are going to be traveling by car this weekend, and then through the summer, that's when traffic really goes up. The Ohio Department of Transportation has reminded folks also to slow down, especially in construction zones. And I'm telling you, I was driving home the other day, and it came upon me that lane wasn't a lane anymore. And luckily, I had a little bit of room to my left. But I was, you know, not speeding down the highway, driving normally home, listening to IdeaStream, and boom, I found cones where the lane should have been. That's going to happen a lot to people this summer.
Yeah, we live pretty much in the same area. I'm not thrilled with that traffic pattern change.
No, it's not great.
That came upon us. But yeah, I mean, you're right. And with coming up with this holiday, obviously Memorial Day considered traditionally considered a driving holiday. 37 million Americans expected to get on the roads. Travel is projected to be up despite high gas prices. So with all these things, yeah, and you've never known Ohio to have a bunch of construction and orange barrels at this time of year, have you? But you know, seriously, it seems like we go from the winter where ODOT is saying, our plow drivers are getting hit, you're crowding the plow, and our workers are in danger, to now the summer season where they're out and they're working. And again, you know, the quote from Brent Kovacs, who's the spokesperson for ODOT District 12, Ohio Department of Transportation, 133 ODOT crews, including workers and equipment, were struck on Ohio roads last year.
Wow.
He also mentioned the construction zone's currently active on 480 from Lee Road to the 77 interchange and going out east further. Look, I mean, if you spend any amount of time in Ohio, you know that this is the time of year. It seems like it's maybe many other times of year, but especially this time of year, the orange barrels are out, the crews are going to be out, and you've got to be careful, and you've got to slow down because, you know, again, it seems like in the summer and in the winter, we're hearing the Department of Transportation saying our crews are in danger. People have to slow down and get over.
Yeah, this is the time of the year when our state flower blooms, the orange barrel blossom, and you see them everywhere. What's interesting to me is a study, Gabriel, that the Ohio Department of Public Safety, along with the University of Akron, released this week that showed that when people are driving, one of the ways to keep safe is to have a seatbelt on. I've got a car that will yell at me if I don't have my seatbelt. I mean, it's so annoying. I'll put it on just for that. And by the way, I do put my seatbelt on, but sometimes not until I'm out of the driveway, so I hear the binging. But apparently, there are a number of people that don't do that, and Cuyahoga County, Cleveland particularly, very high in lack of use of seatbelts.
I was stunned to read that because you're right. Modern cars will yell at you, beep at you until you put your seatbelt on. So it is definitely a surprising thing to have read. But, you know, Ohio is, you know, amongst the worst in the country as far as people putting on their seatbelts. And that's leading to a lot of traffic deaths related to not having a seatbelt. 2022, 527 people in Ohio killed in traffic crashes, a third consecutive year where Ohio's unbelted fatality rate was above 60%. So not great. And I don't know what else can be done beyond telling people to put their seatbelts on.
Well, one thing could be that the law in Ohio is it's illegal. I think it's a secondary offense, although there's primary offenses for cell phone usage and those types of things. But if you're not wearing a seatbelt, that's not a reason to get pulled over.
Right. I know we're going to get into the new law regarding you know, screens, cell phones being out while you're driving. But think about this. Since the pandemic, we've seen studies that have said speeding is up, alcohol use is up, seatbelt usage is down. That's
not a good combination.
No, that's a bad combination out there on the roadway. So I'm not surprised that we're seeing this kind of effort to really, you know, try to get people to slow down, less distracted driving, and certainly sober driving as well.
And Joe, Ohio does have a new distracted driving law I just referenced. It's in effect now, but it's right now in a public awareness part of the enforcement.
Yeah, it went into effect in April, and basically that says that you can't have your hands on a phone. You can't be, you know, dialing the phone and messing with it, reading texts while you're driving. And police officers can pull you over. If they see you messing with your phone, they can pull you over. They can give you a warning. They can explain it. But as far as actually going into enforcing it with tickets, that won't happen until October. But believe me, I just drove into work this morning and I passed people who were obviously on their phones, and there's a whole lot of work to do in that area.
Yeah.
And by the way, seatbelt saves lives, because I had an accident years ago and the seatbelt kept me from going through a windshield. So,
wow. I mean, that's personal testimony. And you do hear some people, by the way, say, I don't want to wear a seatbelt because then I'll be trapped in my car. And the statistics don't show that that's a problem.
That's true.
Is the beeping not enough? I mean, come on. It's the worst.
I know somebody who stuck a matchbook in their, in the little compartment so that it would stop beeping.
MacGyver.
But, but would not put on the seatbelt. How about just put on the seatbelt?
There you go.
All right. A couple other real short things, but I do want to note Water safety, a big deal. There was a Share the River had a big event this weekend, Glenn, with all of the stakeholders saying, you know, if you're going to be out on the Cuyahoga River, for example, and you're in a kayak and here comes a big ore freighter, don't assume they see you. Get yourself out of the way. But also just in general, boating safety, as it is with driving, don't drink and boat, don't, you know, have situational awareness. But there's a big push right now to have people really understanding what's going on in the water.
Well, yeah, and you look at the trend, too. They are trying to make these recreational activities more accessible. They're opening up more boat docks. They're letting more recreational boaters out on the water. That's a great thing. But as you reference, it's a lot like driving a car on the road, right? If you're in a small car and you're next to a big semi, it's like you see those signs that says, if you can't see my mirrors, I can't see you. Well, same thing. You've got more maneuverability on the road in your smaller car than they do in their big semis, and it's the same thing. If you're on a kayak, you can more easily get out of the way than a big freighter can, and they just, you know, want, as more boaters are on the, recreational boaters are on the water, they want you to be more aware of your surroundings. Obviously, sober boating is big as well, but yeah, you have more maneuverability to get around that freighter than the freighter does to get around you.
And remember, while you're playing on it, it is a working river. And they don't stop freighters from coming by because you're having a party. So right. Just everybody be aware, we can all have fun and be safe. And lastly, Gabe, it's going to be a busy holiday weekend, the busiest since 2005, according to the experts.
Good year.
Travelers in and out of Cleveland Hopkins should plan ahead, though, because parking there right now is limited.
Yeah, with construction, they're down a couple thousand parking spots. They've turned some temporary spots into more long-term spots to make up for the lost ground. But yeah, plan ahead. I mean, there are other ways to get to the airport. Ask your neighbor. There's rideshare, but there's also RTA, which is $2.50 on the Red Line, and it takes you right to the terminal. So,
why is 2005 a good year? Is that when you graduated from college?
It's the year I was born.
Oh.
I'm just kidding.
Neither of those two things are true.
Yeah.
All right. We did talk about the holiday weekend and the unofficial start to summer, the road trips, the cookouts, the safety, all that kind of stuff. But let's just take a moment to acknowledge the Memorial Day holiday actually pays tribute to the men and women in our armed forces who died in line of duty to protect freedoms. The veterans and survivors of World War II and the Holocaust are dwindling. The National World War II Museum estimates that just 167,000 of the more than 16 million veterans who served in World War II remain. The Sound of Ideas on Tuesday will examine the effort to preserve their stories, and I hope you can listen in. All right, moving on to another topic, and that is State Issue 1, Joe. Abortion rights advocates have filed a second lawsuit looking to halt the August special election, where voters would be asked to decide whether to make it harder to amend the state constitution. One person, one vote filed a lawsuit with the Ohio Supreme Court centering on the wording of State Issue 1 that voters will see on their ballots. The wording was approved by the Ohio Ballot Board along party lines, with three Republicans voting to approve it against the Democrats who opposed. One person, one vote claims the wording is misleading. So why?
Well, basically, one person, one vote is saying that the wording doesn't explain the current law and the change that's being requested. And because of that, people may be misled into thinking that it's really easy right now to put something on the ballot. So they feel like there ought to be some language on there putting it in context. That was not added. There are also some words that were used in it that have, you know, like dual meanings that could be used to persuade someone if they just saw that word. So they're asking the Supreme Court to force the ballot board to go back and change that language, make it more nonpartisan, and put it in better context.
So when they say something like, you know, first elevate, should elevate
yes.
the standard, that sounds like a elevate. Positive thing.
It does.
And then the other is if you just lay it out saying, hey, there should be some way to amend the Constitution, you could read that and say, well, I didn't know there already was one. So what I'm voting for is, yes, citizens should be able to amend the Constitution, when in fact what it's saying is it should be a lot harder to amend the Constitution. That's their argument.
Yes. And under this amendment, it would be a lot harder. It would require not only 60% threshold, which we now have 50% plus one, but it would also require signatures from all 88 counties. That's not easy to get. And if you had signatures that came in and you didn't have enough, right now we have what's called a cure period, where you can go out and get more signatures to correct any problems with them. You couldn't do that. under this new amendment. So it is a huge difference, and a lot of people say it would prevent a lot of good legislation, good things that we have had in the past, constitutional amendments that we've had in the past, things, economic things like the Third Frontier Fund, things like that, that those things would be prevented in the future because of these higher thresholds.
One of the things, one of the words I've been hearing a lot is hypocrisy. And that is because the Republicans who are pushing for this August election had just voted to say we're not going to have August elections because no one comes out to them and it costs us a ton of money. But we need to have this one. And the reason for that is it's in advance of this November planned issue that likely will make it to the ballot, or at least there's a whole lot of effort that would enshrine abortion rights into the Constitution. So it's those who say that directly, you can say, okay, that's why they're doing it. But yet you hear a bunch of other folks that say, no, this isn't about that. This is about protecting the Constitution from outside forces, which, by the way, that whole effort is being funded with outside money. But yeah. What about that whole argument and the number of people that said they didn't want this to happen, according to the reporting that you all have done, former attorneys general, former governors, et cetera. Right. But the current governor says he's fine with this.
Yeah, Governor DeWine says he's fine with it because the Ohio Chamber of Commerce and the NFIB and the Ohio Restaurant Association, the Lodging and Hotels Association, all of those associations are coming out and saying that they don't want to have things put on the ballot and that they think that this amendment would help. You think about things coming down the pipe, maybe minimum wage, for example, that could affect things. You could have all kinds of restrictions come down on businesses, and businesses don't like that. So Governor DeWine is saying, basically, you know, he's listened to the businesses, there's some valid concerns, but also remember Governor DeWine is very much against abortion, and he has made no bones about that. And this big issue looming in November has a lot of Republicans upset. But as you noted, Mike, there are a lot of Republicans who are coming out saying, wait, you're making a decision based on, you know, the abortion issue, and you're not really looking at the constitutional issue going forward. And that has been something that Governor Taft, former Governor Taft, and, you know, some of our other former governors, Kasich, they have come out and said, let's slow down. Let's really look at this more. Attorney generals, again, both sides of the aisle, saying, you know, let's not make a decision based on one or two things that could potentially land on the ballot, but let's look at this structurally. Do we really want to make this change? Because it would definitely make it harder for constitutional amendments to pass in the future.
I think you tried to sneak an acronym by me, National Federation of Independent Businesses. Boom. Got that done. All right.
Sorry about that.
You're happy now, aren't you?
I'm
you're happy
toes.
That you got to say that.
I'm happy that Lee Barr is on the other side of this computer screen and she shot me that information. All right.
Sorry
we do.
About
no, it's all good. We're going to take a quick break right now, though. When we come back, we've got a lot of other stories, turn our lens a little bit more local as well. So do stay tuned to the Sound of Ideas Reporters Roundtable. Welcome back to the Sound of Ideas Reporters Roundtable. So glad you're with us. I'm Mike McIntyre, along with Gabriel Kramer and Glenn Forbes here in studio and in Columbus. From the State House News Bureau, Joe Ingles is with us, too. The police shooting death of Jaylen Walker and the special grand jury's decision not to indict any of the officers involved brought hundreds of protesters to Akron Wednesday. Activists are demanding that the Department of Justice investigate the Akron Police Department. Activists also want the officers involved to be fired or for Ohio to end its qualified immunity policy that provides broad protections for police officers. Glenda Walker family attorney is proposing what he calls Jaylen's Law, which would in effect prohibit police from chasing suspects who flee traffic stops.
Yeah, we've seen this effort as well in Cleveland, and a lot of different municipalities are taking a closer look at these chase laws, chase guidelines, policies, whatever you want to call it. I think it's interesting because what you're going to have the police union saying and police groups are going to say, well, what if the car is stolen? What if the car is registered to someone who has a warrant? But what we've seen in the past is we've seen that these chases reach such high speeds it puts other people in danger. It's not just the officers or the suspect or whatever. We've had other people in the city of Cleveland, innocent, you know, young people killed during these police chases. So it is an interesting thing to look at. A lot of municipalities are looking at it. I think what is going to be important here is the language of that proposal, if it is to go anywhere. You know, what is the language going to be? There are certainly some people on Akron City Council who are going to be asking some of those questions. But of course, there's also a civilian police review board now in Akron. I think we'll get into that a little bit as well.
Yeah, traffic stops really have been on criminal justice reform agendas all over the place. I mean, Glenn mentioned in Cleveland as well, but the whole idea, Gabriel, of traffic stops and how that can be the spark that leads to these types of endings.
It's easy to look at Jaylen Walker as a prime example. It's easy to look back at 2012 and the death of Timothy Russell and Melissa Williams in Cleveland, who were killed by police officers in a high-speed chase as well. And they were both unarmed and had several rounds shot through their car. So, I think you can look at this classic story, and I'll point out, I'm not black, but you hear it from black men all the time telling their kids and their children, and you see it in TVs, movies, or you hear it anecdotally from friends. If you're pulled over by the police, you comply as best you can. It's yes, sir, no, sir, yes, officer, no, officer, because there are black people living, scared for their lives of what might happen if what might seem like a chase or might seem like, an objection to authority can get out of hand and lead to, people dying. So this is definitely on the top of minds of, perhaps a police chase or police stops shouldn't lead to police chases. And that's been, people in Akron have been very vocal about that lately.
You hear that argument, but then you also hear from the folks that are like, wait a minute, someone is a criminal and could be, often when you have traffic stops, right. We had an email earlier, that you find guns or other kinds of contraband, sure. Or things that are dangerous to the community. So basically people can act with impunity.
Well, I mean, I don't, it's certainly not a definitive thing, but when you're seeing so much of it being people who are unarmed, or so much of it being people who, got in a situation where they were being unfairly treated, that's when something needs to be done about it. And that's when you need to realize, maybe do we need to rethink and reform how police stops are done.
Shamus Malik, who is Akron's presumptive next mayor, came out with the protesters and promised that the change that he campaigned for is coming. What kind of change?
He's talking about police reform. And it's interesting because it's a pretty progressive idea that a lot of people who come off as progressive in Ohio are afraid to really be as vocal about. Justin Bibb is in a similar sense where, people don't want to upset the police. They want to get support of the police. They don't want to have this kind of tussle between the police department and the mayor's office. And, lately in Akron, people, especially after the Jaylen Walker situation, have really been hammering for, we need police reform. They have the Civilian Oversight Board. So he's not afraid to maybe ruffle some feathers with local police to get his point across.
Yeah, I wonder how police might have felt about the fact that members of the Oversight Board were there with the protesters. And on one hand, you can say, okay, well, they're meeting with the protesters and seeing what they're about, because we have to rule on these things. On the other, if they're out with protesters, are they really an impartial board?
Well, here's the thing. It's what people need to understand is police reform isn't necessarily an anti-police concept. It's improving the police. It's improving training for police and having a police system that exists and just does a better job of policing and handling racial bias.
Glenn, the activists, specifically on the Walker case, they want the full special grand jury transcript released. They want to know what was said and who said it. And they also want the names of officers. The city won't give the names of the officers, and it can't release, under current law, the transcripts.
Yeah, according to Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost and his office, grand jury proceedings and their transcripts are secret. They are not released under federal rules of evidence. Yost's office will point to the fact that they've put the entire case file online. They've been as transparent as they possibly can regarding this case. You know, as far as the officers being named, what you'll continue to hear is that that would endanger their lives. There have been a lot of threats against these officers and a lot of threats against the department in general, according to the police. And so they are not going to do that, particularly because they have not been charged. You may remember during the protests that a lot of police officers weren't wearing their name tags. And that also became an issue because the protesters want to know who is the officer who maybe, I mean, as some of our reporters found out, who is pepper spraying us, right? Who is perhaps escalating some of these situations in the minds of the protesters or some of our reporters who were there. So, you know, that is certainly an issue. But until obviously it doesn't appear that any of these officers are going to be charged. And I would be surprised if any of these names were released because of these safety concerns.
All right. We'll obviously continue to be covering that story as well in Akron. Let's jump back to Columbus. I want to get you back involved in the conversation, Joe. Ohio House Republicans this week introduced a bathroom bill. Nearly two dozen members signed legislation that would block students from using school bathrooms or locker rooms other than those for their gender assigned at birth. Ohio will become part of a trend. In 2016, North Carolina became the first state to pass a bill barring transgender people from using bathrooms consistent with their gender identity. Idaho, Iowa, Arkansas, all kinds of others recently have passed such laws. The Human Rights Campaign and said similar bills have been filed in more than two dozen states. So House Bill 183, it hasn't been assigned to committee yet, but what's the status of that?
Well, it's new. It's got about 20 co-sponsors, House Republicans, who have signed on to it. And as you said, it hasn't been assigned to committee yet because it is new. But it is based off some of these national bills. And the idea behind it is that the state lawmakers say we need to do something because the federal government isn't doing what they need to do to protect people in bathrooms. So this is something that's been introduced by a relatively new lawmaker, but it has backing from, like I said, 20 different Republicans.
You use the word protect, and so that's kind of what it's coming down to. Those people who are sponsoring it saying we need to protect children in these locker rooms. Is there evidence that there has been a problem, that people are, because they're in restrooms or locker rooms that don't match their birth certificate assigned sex, that they are somehow being predators? Is there any evidence that adds to that, or is it really just a perception?
We're not seeing a lot of that right now. I mean, there are anecdotal stories from other states where something has happened, but for the most part, we are not seeing that. But there is the fear of that. And so this would require segregated bathrooms, segregated shower stalls, and it would make sure that, you know, if whatever's on your birth certificate, that's the bathroom you use.
And it is part of a series of proposals that have been happening in Columbus that are looking at LGBTQ plus students, including their participation, transgender students particularly, their participation in sporting events, those types of things. There are a number of these that seem to be coming at a pretty steady pace from the State House.
Yeah, we've seen another one down here that involves trans athletes and women's sports. And basically, you know, they have there's a lot of opposition to it. It would be in both K-12 and in the state colleges. And it's another bill being proposed that has national, you know, some national headwinds behind it. And it's something that would keep anyone. And you could not participate in a sport if it wasn't on your birth certificate. So the one thing to note, though, is when you ask about the need for these bills, on that one in particular, the Ohio High School Athletic Association has had standards in place for a long time, many years, that have dealt with this issue of maybe a trans athlete being stronger than, you know, someone who wasn't a trans athlete, a cisgender. And so it's, you know, a situation where we're not seeing a lot of need coming out of Ohio policy for it. Hmm. It's more of a nationally driven thing.
Yeah, and on that specifically, it's transgender women could not participate in women's sports. And that's been the rub because there's some argument that it would be unfair, that there's an advantage.
Right.
And we've heard the arguments on both sides. But both of those bills are wending their way through.
Right. Both of those are winding their way through. There's also another bill that bans hormones, and it bans gender reassignment surgery, and that one's moving its way through as well. Now, those two bills are kind of stalled right now, but that doesn't mean that they won't go anywhere. That just means they're stalled right now.
Right. Firmly, overall, that's called gender-affirming care. And we'll obviously be keeping an eye on that as well. Let's take a quick break right here. Before we do that, though, a couple of quick bits of business. One is a thought from Chris in Painesville about issue one. She says, most importantly, ballot issue one is about Republicans maintaining one-party rule. It's about blocking an amendment that would codify fair redistricting. That needs to be highlighted anytime we discuss ballot issue one. And secondly, I mentioned at the end of the discussion about Memorial Day the importance of remembering folks from World War II and that you could look forward to hearing about that. Well, good news. All you have to do is go to our website because we already did it last Tuesday, not this coming Tuesday. So my fault on that. But you can listen back to it, so go right ahead and go to ideastream.org/SOI. Look for the show this past Tuesday where you get all of those remembrances and how we're going to keep those folks high on the list in our minds. All right, we're going to take a quick break right now, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Stay tuned. Glad to have you back here with the Sound of Ideas Reporters Roundtable with Gabriel Kramer, Glenn Forbes, and Joe Ingles. I'm Mike McIntyre. A Cleveland group that wants to put budgeting decisions more into the hands of citizens will kick off a campaign later today. The goal of PBCLE, that's Participatory Budgeting Cleveland, is to get a charter amendment issue before voters in November. If passed, the amendment would set aside 2% of the annual budget for residents to decide how to spend. Gabe, we saw earlier, and you covered this, a push for participatory budgeting and council pushing back, saying that's what we were put here to do. Now they're saying, okay, well, then let's get an amendment so we can say we were put here to do it for at least 2% of the money.
Right. So the concept of this goal is to get 6,000 signatures, and in doing so, it can be put on the ballot by bypassing city council. City council wasn't on board. They didn't say completely no. They said, please revise this, and we'll table it, and we'll come back to it and consider it. The interesting thing is the ask in January was for $5.5 million of American Rescue Plan Act funding, and now they're asking for 2% of the general fund, which if it were today would be about $14 million, so even more money. But this in theory would give people more direct power or more direct access in deciding what exactly is done. They can propose ideas, propose projects, and then there can be a community vote on which of these projects and ideas get approved. And an interesting thing that's in the language of this initiative is people 13 years old and up can not only propose concepts of what can be done with this money, but they also get to be part of the voting process.
I wonder how that's going to play with council, which already was kind of obfuscating here, and now they're saying, hold on a minute, you're going to put federal or put government money in the hands of 13-year-olds?
Well, it's interesting because part of the discussion back in January when they said, please revise it, was, you know, let's think of ways that we can engage the youth. And this is certainly a way to engage the youth. And not only engage the youth, but engage people in general to want to get involved. And, you know, a lot of the advocates are saying people are going to be more excited and more that they can be more directly involved. You know, voter turnout is low in Cleveland, like abysmally low. And people might be more willing to be engaged in a process like this.
Moving to Akron, the Board of Education there voted this week to cut two high-level administrative positions and then sent a warning shot saying there are going to be more layoffs and other cuts because the five-year forecast for the district shows a $6.5 million deficit for next fiscal year. It goes up to $37 million the year after that. They're looking for a superintendent. I look at those things, Glenn, and I'm thinking, I'm stepping into a situation here. The district says it'll make cuts through attrition first, but that may not get it to where it needs to be.
Yeah, it's that foreshadowing that gets you, right? It's like, yeah, we're laying off these two positions, but that's not going to account for $6.5 million, and that's certainly not going to account for $37 million down the road. I think, you know, they are higher salaried positions. However, I mean, this is a total, you know, reorganization not only of the administration, but also the schools. I mean, they're talking about closing North High School and trying to, you know, streamline some of these other, you know, buildings and some of these issues that they have. These are big deficits. Of course, they would like to try to do it through attrition first. The previous superintendent, Christine Fowler Mack, told the Akron Beacon Journal that the district's central office was lean and they needed more help to execute on a vision of improvement for the district. I don't think they're going to be looking for the next superintendent to say that, right? I mean, they're going to be looking for somebody to say, I can make do with less, because what they're saying is the numbers are the numbers. We've got to find $37 million, and we can't be, you know, adding people here and there. We've got to make more cuts.
As I mentioned, this comes as they're looking for a new superintendent. In Cleveland, there is a new superintendent, and the Board of Education finalized a contract, or CEO in Cleveland. They finalized the contract this week.
They did. Warren Morgan is now officially in the fold. Dr. Warren Morgan, I should say. A couple of interesting things about that deal. He'll be required to live within the boundaries of the school district 6 months into the contract. He does get a small housing allowance, car allowance, things like that. The district also agreed to pay 6% of Morgan's salary per year to a tax-sheltered annuity. That's starting in 2024. The base salary, I can't find at the moment, but I do know that the $285,000, that is a raise from Eric Gordon, the previous CEO's, his last four-year contract with the district, his base salary was $257,000.
Right, and that was a big cut, by the way, from Eugene Sanders, who he took over for. So when you look at the salary part, it's not outlandish compared to what it could have been. Interesting. All right, we'll keep an eye on what's going on with the Cleveland schools as well, and in Akron, too. Our Connor Morris is on those stories. Let me talk one other story that you worked on, Gabe, and that is wage theft. Cuyahoga County Council passed a wage theft ordinance Tuesday. It prevents the county from doing business with companies who have a history of wage theft. What's wage theft?
Wage theft is concept like not paying your workers overtime rates or not paying them properly in tips.
Taking the tips instead of providing to their workers. Paying less than minimum wage.
Yes, and paying less than minimum wage. So basically, you know, people are leaving a lot of money on the table because of companies involved with wage theft. It's apparently a pretty bad problem in Ohio. About 213 Ohioans are victims of wage theft each year, and we're talking about hundreds of million dollars that are taken from workers.
They already had something on the books for wage theft. What? How did this make it any different?
So, I mean, there's language in the legislation that says, you know, if companies are essentially that says if companies are working unethically, then the inspector general can do something about it and debar them from working. But Dale Miller, one of the county council people who was a sponsor of this legislation, said this is more explicit. It's on there. It used the words wage theft, and too many acts of wage theft to him had been falling through the cracks.
All right. I'm going to take a little time here at the end of the show to talk about a couple of deaths that we had this week. Northeast Ohioans mourned the passing this week of former Akron Mayor and U.S. Representative Tom Sawyer. The distinguished Democrat served in many roles throughout his decades-long career. Sawyer was Akron through and through. He was born in the city, went to Buchtel High School and the University of Akron. He worked as an English teacher before beginning his political career in the Ohio State House. Sawyer is being remembered by Democrats and Republicans alike as a dedicated public servant who had a knack for bringing people together. When you look at politics as it exists today, you can say he was from another era, a gentleman and a convener. Sawyer died after a long illness. He was 77. Governor DeWine described Sawyer Glenn in a statement as one of the nicest people I've ever worked with. Nice. That's not a word you hear much in our current politics.
Yeah, like you said, it's kind of almost like from a bygone era when you get this kind of bipartisan support, bipartisan mourning, if you will, in this situation. But yeah, and it, amazingly, when he became Akron mayor, he broke an 18-year streak of Republicans being mayor. That's another kind of relic when we think about politics today.
And there hasn't been a Democrat or there hasn't been a Republican mayor of Akron since.
Since. Yeah. Right.
Interesting. I also saw where he became the foremost expert really in the country on the census. He was put in charge of that and suddenly he's giving college lectures. The guy was a smart dude.
Yeah.
Karen tells me, Joe, by the way, that he would check in at the State House News Bureau before his drives home to Akron.
Yeah, he would. He'd stick his head in, and he always had something kind to say. He'd always make a nice comment, you know, and it was just always, you know, we kind of look forward to him sticking his head in here every day as he left to say goodbye and tell us something funny or, you know, say something kind. And I'll always remember him as a very kind person.
Well, rest in peace to Tom Sawyer. Another loss this week. The music world lost a legend. Tina Turner died Tuesday at the age of 83 after a long illness. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inducted Turner as a solo performer in 2021. She previously went into the hall in 1991 as part of the duo Ike and Tina Turner. And after ending her abusive marriage to Ike Turner, Tina found renewed fame in the 80s as a solo artist. Becoming known as the Queen of Rock and Roll, she was, in the eyes of many, simply the best. Guys, thoughts about Tina Turner?
She's one of the best ever. She's on the Hall of Fame and deserves it. So, you know, we'll have to honor her.
Yeah, only a handful of, you know, two-time inductees. Tina Turner is one of them. The Rock Hall, gracious enough to send out some clips and highlights of her award speeches. And, you know, Tina Turner songs have been running in my head all week. Yeah. So that's, and I'm sure with every millions of other people, too.
How could
and that's
you not dance to Tina Turner?
Exactly.
Yeah. She was best. She really was. And you know, those legs. Wow.
I'm glad you said it, but you're right. Saw the documentary on her, by the way. I think it was HBO a couple of years ago.
Great.
Just terrific. If you have access to that, take a look. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up the show. She is simply the best, so we're riding out with her hit, Simply the Best. To get the last word on today's topic, send us an email, soi@ideastream.org. We're on Twitter at Sound of Ideas as well. And thank you to Glenn and to Gabe and to Joe, all of you, for being here. Thanks so much today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Monday on the Sound of Ideas, the team is off for Memorial Day. In our time slot, we bring you a special episode of Top of Mind that examines efforts to preserve the memories and experiences of our nation's veterans, to remember the sacrifices they made to preserve our freedoms. I'll be listening to that after I binge HBO's awesome Band of Brothers over the weekend. If you missed any portion of this program, find us online or listen to the Sound of Ideas podcast. You can also hear a rebroadcast tonight at 9 on 89.7 WKSU. I'm Mike McIntyre. Thanks for listening, and stay safe.